What is your
Oh, just my farm.
My farm?
Yeah. I feel like it's some special time to have a lot of people come to see you, so I don't know. It makes me appreciate it more.
Let me know that our other places. One of ours is on the panel. Where are the other two?
She went to school and Leslie just ran into the class. She's going to grab her microphone. She was recording.
I think it's funny. Like, I've seen that two of the panelists in so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Got to meet Dan as well.
Can I ask what your, because it's a, what is your land ethic or what's your practice? Can I ask a little bit about the practice? How you practice the land?
Yeah, we're bad guys because we do, well, we're a small town farm. Like, we're not like mega developers or anything. Like, we're a small family farm. But we still make use of like mechanical machinery and that, fertilizer. I don't know, like, it's a term, futurist kind of deal. I do believe technology, so most of the problems. Like, I do believe, like, you need also culturally and socially take responsibility too, but there's no reason to throw science at it as well as progress.
So the practices that you see yourself as stewards of your land, of your farm, or just that you're connected?
I feel connected. I wouldn't say stewards per se. We utilize the farm. It's been in my family for generations. So actually, no. Yeah, we are stewards of the land because it's been held in our family for so long. And my brother's probably going to inherit the farm too. So. I'll get to be connected there. It's always nice heading home to the farm for vacations and holidays. So, yeah, I guess. I'm having a lot of realizations, subtle ones, but they add up.
See, and that was going to be my next question is, you know, in your participation with this and time at Augustana as well, because, I mean, this is kind of, there are themes that probably permeate your science classes as well. No, not at all. No.
This is like... completely new.
This is liberal.
Like, this
science
is
objective.
This is environmental science.
Science.
Thank you.
Okay. So my question was, like, if it was you that were inheriting the land, what's one thing that you would want to see happen on that land?
Well, that would mean a completely different person. Like, if I was theoretically going to inherit the land, then I would theoretically do what my brother's going to do and go to agricultural school at Olds. Theoretically, probably keep working the farm the same way. Probably ramp up production over time. Get Costco and kind of deal. Like, we're downsizing right now. We're getting rid of our cattle. And we're going to switch to just grain and stuff because my family, like, it's a big time commitment. And it costs money, so. But then you could say, though, that's not sustainable, that all the agribusinesses are forcing us out of business by increasing the, ramping up the costs of, what's the term again, all the different stuff you use, like fertilizer and that.
Inputs. Agricultural inputs.
That's getting too expensive.
And in fact, you can't clean your own seeds or anything anymore, you can buy them, you can bring them much.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I wouldn't touch it with the tablets.
And it sounds like having a small farm is really hard.
We get hit worse. Because if you're bigger, you can weather the storm. And if anything, you can sell off equity in order to stay alive. And plus, my grandpa's getting too old to farm anymore, too. Because my grandpa, his two sons, so, which is my dad, and then my uncle, then my brother, and then there's me. But I'm here at school for 8 months of the year, so I'm kind of, besides the summer, missing some of the other parts, too. Like, I come home and I drive tractor when I can to help, but I don't know, we just don't have the people to sustain it anymore.
Right.
So that's why we're downsizing a bit.
Sorry, what are you guys doing?
I'm a student as well. I'm in education, basically digital education.
Are you doing your master's thing?
Yeah, I'm doing my master's through Athabasca. And my My thesis is on digital education and liberal arts, which is why I'm involved in doing the digital part of this course. Yeah. But yeah.
Do you deal a lot with smart boards?
No, I don't do anything.
That was brought into the education system. That's a form of digital education.
Yeah, true. But I'm more interested. Yeah, and I do more post-secondary and open classrooms. That's the most it's the most interesting thing to me. That, like, for example, I know that right now Bill is listening in to our conversation, as he was last night, from UNBC, and that we can share the knowledge that we have here with people in other places.
We have, like, a guy listening from New Zealand or something that wanted to join one of our classes.
Australia, yeah. So that's really cool to me. It's making those options open.
And I like that. I checked out that website, Spirit of the Land, when I heard about the conference. I saw that there was also a course, and like all your readings are right there, and there's videos right there. And I mean, okay, I mean, I teach a course myself Thursday nights, but I feel like I could almost follow that course.
Yeah, you can.
If I wanted to.
You can listen to the archives after the fact if you want, and you can you're more than welcome to blog with us if you want to. If you want to put things up on our...
I'm not very good at blogging.
Or I can even make you a member if you want to comment on any of the things as well. But there are people here that are community members that aren't in our classroom, that aren't in cameras at all.
I think that's excellent. And also that it's not just a course for, you know, enrolled post-secondary students.
Mm-hmm. I think that's excellent. What do you teach?
Linguistics.
Okay. At the MTU campus?
U of A.
Okay.
Part-time.
Okay.
We're getting away from the question.
Yes. Can someone restate the question for me? I got really deep down
land
in that. In you leaving your farm,
but
I understand. Pardon?
Land ethics and practice is what I think.
Oh,
my
yes.
Pauses really in really strange places when he talks. So I'll catch like the first half of it and he'll stop and I'll think that's it. And then all of a sudden there's more and I wasn't paying attention.
Just like Commander James T. Kirk from Star Trek.
See, the land ethic question is, it's an interesting one for me because I've spent I've spent half of my adult life living in other countries. And that really resonated for me, Brenda's discussion, because I'm just now coming back to this place where I grew up, like I grew up half an hour from here, and in this class about connecting to the land and trying to understand if a nomadic person has the same, how do you ground your land ethic if you keep moving the ground under your feet constantly?
Yeah.
How do you have that relationship with the changing of seasons and the slow movement of the earth and the natural system if you're constantly moving? And so that question of what is my land use ethic? How do I connect with all of the lands that I have been in and had the privilege to visit? Yeah, how do I, is it possible even to form deep relationships when your time is limited?
I guess it depends if you're aware or not. If you don't even think, like if you never even thought to think of that, you won't have one. Like by having this and critically questioning it, then you can surely start to begin to develop your own mind. Most people probably just go through life knowing that. That's how it's.
And I think the same question applies to like so many people in the world live in cities. And I mean, I think in cities like Edmonton and Calgary, we're very privileged because, you know, the single family dwelling with a yard is the norm, although the houses seem to get bigger and the yards
get smaller,
which is insane. But in many cities, there are no yards, you know, so then how do you connect to the land there? Yeah, parks.
Yeah, I guess your park.
But I think also a cityscape can also be the land that you're connected to.
Absolutely.
Right? It's maybe it's the idea of neighborhood or something like that. And meeting your neighbors. So when you're in a different country, that you're not shielding yourself, you know, oh, these people speak a different language and they have a different culture but that you try to meet, or some of the people?
Me too.
Yeah.
I have family that lives in London, England, and they're actually, they live in like a fairly big apartment complex, and there's like, I think, 10 other families that live in this building, and all of them got together, and they actually have a chicken coop in what used to be the, in what was part of the parking lot.
That's awesome!
So, like, something like that, like, in the middle of Oxford in London,
yeah,
there's a chicken coop beside this apartment building. And they've sent me pictures of it, and like, oh, just going to get the eggs, and like, they take turns going and picking up the eggs, and every morning a different family gets to go, kind of thing. Like, it's really cool.
That's
because, like, you never
think I love that.
In London.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, in some of the places where I've been, in those cityscapes where you are usually in an apartment block or something like that, the parks in those cities and the interaction between the people in the parks in those cities, because you don't have your own little patch of grass in your backyard that you can have barbecue on. You have to go to the shared natural area.
The shared spaces.
And you're going to be interacting with the other people around you and stuff like that as well.
I think that's also the concept in Vancouver.
Well,
any park. But I know the city planning in Vancouver has very progressive high density. I mean, they're also forced because they can't expand. Oh, right, they don't have the luxury. But, and so people, families, you know, here in Alberta, the thinking is, you know, once I have kids, I need a backyard, right? Or maybe even better, an acreage. But there, families will live, you know, in high rises, in whatever, apartments. But then there are spots, those shared spots everywhere. Parks and whatever. Community gardening is big in Vancouver. Chickens are legal, you know. So yeah, just as another example.
Yeah. The more urban a place is, the more likely it is to have a lot of smaller little parks and stuff. Like in Camrose, there's two or three big parks. If you go to Edmonton, there's like two big ones and however many little tiny parks that people are hanging out there. I feel like the more people there are in the more concentrated the population is, the more likely it is that the green spaces are going to be smaller, but they'll be more.
I do like going longboarding in the park around here, and like it can take an hour to do the whole trail. That's nice. I'm getting lost in.
I just wanted to mention, Bill says that addressing the question of a land ethic, I think it is a value or a principle that we carry from place to place. Our actions need to map into our values, he said. He only has 140 characters to contribute at a time, so.
It would be cool if we could have like had a live stream with him on the laptop.
Who is Bill?
Bill is, I don't know, he doesn't have his last name on here, but he works at UNBC. The Vice Provost of Student Engagement in Prince George.
Thanks.
Yeah, and he's been sharing our class broadcast and stuff like that with folks. And stuff. You didn't get the same.
Well, I've been intrigued by listening. But,
oh my god. He made me bawl.
That kid, I don't know what it is about. Thanks, guys.
I think we have the question of what if you don't have
that nomadic question?
The nomadic question, or also the question about if you don't have, you know, land, right? There's all the people up there.